You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, November 21st, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, barely, in the heartland of downtown Brooklyn. It's Casual Friday, folks. So casual that we had somebody heard me say, "Oh, well, someone quoted me. Oh, shite, start it all over." And that's, in fact, what we did. We will put that on the soundboard. On the program today, Cliff Schecter will be joining us, as he is wont to do on Fridays. Also on the program, Isabel Gillies will be here to give us a movie review. Yes, I just had a bit of a Bill O'Reilly moment. We had to start three times, and I also got a piercing screech in my ears on the same day that I decided to wear earbuds, two earbuds. So on the program today, of course, the big news yesterday was, of course, President Obama's executive action on immigration. It's going to allow about 5 million people to be assured that over the course of the next 3 years, they will not be deported. And that's at the end of the day, that's all it does. Although there's some big implications for that. And it's, if you are one of those people, or you are probably one of the, I don't know, probably 15 million, 20 million people, 30 million people who are friends or family of that person, it makes a huge difference in your daily life. And then, of course, if you are Ted Cruz, it also makes a huge difference in your daily life because your fundraising just went through the roof. We will talk about that, and the question as to whether or not the Senate torture bill is the Senate, I should say, Senate Intelligence Torture Report is going to be released at all, and whether or not that's going to put some pressure on departing Senator Mark Udall to get on the Senate floor and read it. We will see. Also, Peggy Noonan reminds us that Keystone is really about manliness. And Cliff is going to have an amazing story of an exoneration coming out of Ohio. We will talk to him about that. Reportedly, there's a chance it could happen, frankly, while we're on air, but I don't know. The grand jury will come down with an indictment or non-indictment, I guess, or a lack of indictment of Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, who reportedly will resign upon the announcement, presumably as a way of offering something to somebody. "I'm willing to take a pension now that I've shot this unarmed man." All that and more on today's program. All right, so we're obviously running a little bit behind because we had a little bit of a screw up there, but so we'll get to Cliff. Just a reminder that it is your memberships that make this show possible. Only, and you will notice maybe we have a little bit of a quality improvement in our sound today, to the extent that we know that I'm actually on air. Matt's not here today. We're a little short-staffed. And also a slightly different set of things we got to get going now for the sound. So hopefully it sounds a little bit better. We're going to be doing that fundraiser when we get back from Thanksgiving to improve all sorts of things around here. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter. There should just be the iPod up, and I should be potted down. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, is Cliff Schechter. But before we get to the phone, my 360 unit should be turned up. Cliff's audio should be down. Yeah. And we need to do this.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
And now we have Cliff Schechter. Cliff, are you there?
Is my audio turned back up?
It is. A little bit loud. Hold on. Here we go.
So you mean I'm a little bit loud or my audio?
No. Well, you are always a little bit loud, but your audio is a little bit hot. I think we're in okay shape now. Cliffy, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. My cold is starting to recede slightly. And
So this is one of those cases where recession is good?
Yeah, I guess so. And the ringing in my ears from our little escapade at the beginning of the top of the show has also diminished. So, and I've stemmed the bleeding. So now, Cliff, obviously, we're going to talk about what happened last night, because it really is. I mean, I was just I don't know. I guess there was one interview afterwards where you know, and I did an interview yesterday with a woman who was a who got relief under the DACA, essentially a dreamer, and
yep.
That her mother, because her mother's been in this country now for 25 some odd years, I believe, she will also get relief, or at least the relief in knowing that she is on a will not be deported for 3 years list, which, you know, is certainly half a loaf, but that is a very nice tasting loaf to keep the weird metaphor going. But
yeah.
But before we get to that, let's talk about this story, because I know, and I think we've certainly talked about it on this program, that you sit on the board of the Ohio Innocence Project, Remind people what that is, and then let's talk about what is a record-breaking and also a heartbreaking case that got resolved today. I mean, in some ways, we're sort of breaking some news.
Yeah. I do. I sit on the board of the Ohio Innocence Project, and so to explain what that is, there are innocence projects in many states around the country. And so obviously this is not unique in that way, but the Ohio one has been a particularly vigorous one, and I was, you know, honored when they sort of asked me to be a part of it. And what it does is we go in when we get sort of evidence, that, or, you know, any sort of inclination, and not, you know, sort of somebody saying, I just think so, but really, you know, when somebody really comes to us and we have a good reason to believe that somebody who's in prison, is innocent, we go to bat for them in every way we possibly can. We've got a team of amazing students that are at the University of Cincinnati Law School, which is where it's based here. It's based at UC. They actually get credit for this, and they work and research and try to find everything they can about the case. We go and obviously meet with those who have been incarcerated. We recently, and that was one of the big things that happened with this case, we were able to raise enough funds to hire investigators who literally in this case went and knocked door to door to see if people remembered things from 40 years ago, and it turned out somebody did. And, you know, so we do what we can to get people who are innocent out of prison. And, you know, the more you do this, you will learn, sadly, and it certainly will make you start questioning certain things you believe. I would tell you, certainly, if you're a death penalty supporter, because I can't tell you how many times you come across something where the evidence was staring people in the face that somebody wasn't guilty, but the easiest thing to do was just to make them guilty, and or it was based on racism or something else. And so that's what we do in general. In this case, there's a man who literally at 9 o'clock this morning walked out of prison in Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, the Cleveland area. Cleveland's in Cuyahoga County. His name's Ricky Jackson, and this is now a record breaker in terms of he'd spent the longest time in prison in the history of this country, for a crime he didn't commit, at least that we know of at this point. He was in prison for 39 years. And the story itself is heartbreaking in that he and two other men, they're African-American, you know, and this will sound sadly familiar. I don't want to make this all about race, but clearly race played a role, a big role here. You know, a man was murdered who was white, and there were these three guys, and the police decided they were guilty. And they were going to arrest them, and they did not have evidence they needed. The police were white. So they went to a 12-year-old boy. I don't know how they came upon him, who's African-American, and basically pressured him and threatened him to tell the story with all the details that they told him and say that he had seen it when he had not. So he was 12 at the time. You have to imagine the power relationship if you're an African-American 12-year-old in 1975.
Let me quote from the story, because this is, you know, I mean, obviously, you're in prison for 39 years. It is almost, I find it impossible to wrap my arms around the notion of being in prison for 40 years for a crime that you knew you did not commit. And what do you do when you walk out of prison? But this story of Ed Vernon, too, is also heartbreaking. This is the guy who was a 12-year-old. He's now in his 50s. He had been he had told the cops. Well, this is what the piece in the Huffington Post says. He was on in court on Monday and Tuesday. He explained that at first he believed in his 12-year-old mind that he was doing the right thing by making up the story to help police solve the crime. But his mother knew that he was lying and told him that when the police called him downtown to identify the suspects in a lineup, he should refuse to identify them, and that would be the end of it. He did as his mother told him, but the detectives would not accept his recantation. He's a 12-year-old boy. Detectives took him into a room and screamed at him, threw objects around the room, told the crying 12-year-old that his parents would be sent to prison for perjury if he didn't change his story. They got him to sign a statement implicating the suspects with details about the murder that they had fed to him. And they had him claim in the statement that he didn't identify the suspects in the lineup because he was too scared. Vernon explained to the judge this week, I was a black kid, poor and uneducated from the neighborhood. A white man had been killed. I didn't know anything about the justice system. Do you really think as a 12-year-old I could stand up to those detectives screaming in my face? Vernon sobbed on the stand when he described how his lie from the pits of hell had ruined his life and how he had finally felt relief when he had confessed to his pastor recently. I mean, just the all of this is just so heartbreaking.
It is, because it's not just one life. These three gentlemen who were there in prison lost over 100 years of combined time for crimes none of them committed. Okay, then you've got this 12-year-old who, you know, is living with this. He's had health problems because of it. I mean, living this tortured life because he knew he told this lie that ruined people's lives that he did not want to tell. And then you wonder also, they now have a pretty good idea that there was somebody with a similar MO to this who committed other murders. So I don't even know this part of the story, but how many people were hurt afterwards because the right person was not pursued? I mean, you know, it's incredibly upsetting. But I would say to you at the same time, you know, I mean, all of us who work with the Innocence Project here, I can't tell you, with everything else bad going on in the world and everything, walking around today, I don't know that I've ever felt this good about what I've done in my work life, ever. Because just what comes with knowing that you know, as much as I wish I could give everything back to these people who are hurt, but we were able to give them their lives back in some way. This, you know, Ricky Jackson lost some 20 to 59 in prison, but hopefully he'll still have many years on this earth and he'll be able to go out and live a life, you know, and with this Innocence Project has just been 11 years in Ohio and not that much longer, any of them nationally. So this wouldn't have been around and available to anybody pre-11 years ago. This would have been a life sentence for him. And, you know, what's key about all this also, a few other things I'd like to mention. One is that I think initially some of the prosecutors, because, of course, they don't want to, you know, look bad, 10 years ago or so went to him and said if he would just admit he was guilty and say that he was sorry, they would let him go. Because I think we're starting to see that evidence was mounting. He didn't do it, and he refused to do that. He would not admit, he would not say that he had done something he didn't do just to get out of prison, which, if you can picture yourself in that situation, that is rather amazing in and of itself to me, that he was such a man of principle, you know, that he wasn't going to do that. But, you know, again, I brought up the racial aspect of it, the police, the power of police versus citizens, which, you know, we've all seen and may see, depending upon when this decision comes down in Ferguson, that's been in the news recently. Also, what we've seen go on in a number of states, including, not ironically enough, Ohio, where the death penalty, we've had people lying on gurneys for an hour, not dying, but suffering, right, because of this mix of chemicals, because we're still up there with Saudi Arabia and China and Iran and other, you know, Somalia and whoever else, as one of the only countries that executes people on this earth. And so to me, whatever your belief was, and I must admit, I always admit that I've generally been a progressive guy for most of my life, but there was a period in time where I believed in the death penalty. I'll say that. And probably a good 8-10 years ago, more than that, maybe a dozen years ago, I came to realize, because when you start looking at the system and realize the fallibility of the system, realize that mistakes can be made, but then purposeful things can be done, that racism plays a role, that the type of how wealthy you are and the type of lawyer you get and all the different ways that it's arbitrary. One person gets a death penalty for something in one state, one person doesn't get it in the other state. But I mean, the biggest thing of all, cases like this, where innocent people can be executed, one of the three, not Ricky, but one of the other gentlemen who was in prison also for this, wrongly imprisoned for this, was 20 days away from being executed. So for anybody out there who really wants to still make the claim that we've never executed anybody innocent, I'm telling you that you literally are stuffing your head in the sand. That all three of these guys, if Ohio's statute hadn't been found, death penalty statute hadn't been found unconstitutional in the late 70s, which it was, and they needed to come up with a new one, which they did. But if it wasn't for the luck of timing in that happening, these three men would be dead. They would have all been executed. And the only reason they weren't was because of that. So, you know, there's so many important parts about this story and what we need to learn from it going forward. And so, and again, I mean, I've never been a part of anything that has made me feel, you know, I mean, this is something where I sit on the board, so this isn't a client. Right. I don't get paid. I give my time. I don't make any money off of it. And you know what? It makes it feel that much better, just that I could play any role in this. So
yeah, it's an amazing, and I think I've spoken to some folks from that from the Innocence Project. I mean, and these all around the country. But yes, I, you know, I am partial to arguments against the death penalty. In a broader sense, but certainly there's no evidence that it's in any way effective or that we're not killing the, you know, innocent people. It's just wow, it's just an amazing story. And I certainly hope, you know, like in a situation like this, I hope that the state steps in and just gives an award to these guys rather than making them go and sue for 10 years, because, I mean, look, you've been in prison for 40 years. You have the times where you would develop all sorts of skills.
That's right.
And you're in your mid-50s. It's hard enough, frankly, for people who are in their mid-50s who have not been in prison for the past 40 years, who
he's actually,
are out
he's,
of work.
Not that you're well way off, but yeah, he's actually 59. I mean, not that that makes a huge difference from 55, but still. And when you went in when you're 20, I'm glad you brought this up, because I was going to bring this up and I was going to say, I hope that you'd be amenable. There's a GoFundMe page right now for him, which I can send you a link if you're willing to throw up at the site, because we're trying to raise $30,000. Because again, he has no way of making any money. He's going to, we're hoping that the state just gives him a settlement. Ohio actually is very progressive in that way, partially because long before I got on the board, so no credit goes to me, the head of the program, Mark Godsey, was able to go and fight in Columbus and get legislation passed in Ohio to award these guys, you know, real money for what they suffered. And so at some point he will get that, but I'm hoping the state does the right thing and gives it to him immediately. Because again, in the meantime, we've got a fund that we're going to try to do to buy him some clothing and some toiletries and some basics. And, you know, they just took him out to his first meal up in Columbus. Up in Cleveland after, and that's all great. But he's going to live day to day now until something happens without those skills, without any real way to make money. So I appreciate it. I'm going to send that to you, Sam.
Yeah, no, I am it to me now, and we'll put it up on the site in minutes. I mean, for the Central Park Five, it took them, yes, I think, about, in some instances, 13 years, maybe it was 7 or 8 years for the rest of them, and they just basically got their settlement, I think, a couple of weeks ago, basically because de Blasio, when he came in, was like, all right, we're done pretending that this city didn't screw up and destroy these guys' lives. And, you know, they're all 10, 15 years younger and spent, you know, anywhere from 20 to 25 years less,
yep,
in prison. And still, it's heartbreaking. So, you know, yes, please send us that link.
I hand it to you, okay, so it should be right there. And yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, again, this is even the most extreme case, but it happens to plenty of other people. When they first asked me to join, I went out to lunch with this terrific guy named Dean Gillespie, who was in prison for 19 years for a rape he didn't commit. And so again, 39 may be the worst of it, but you end up meeting lots of people who lost 8 years, 12 years, 19 years. And I mean, you have to think about what you lose in terms of income, in terms of, you know, and emotional distress and everything for that too. I mean, it's not like if it's not 39 years, it's nothing. Right. It's still, what, you know, think of a couple of years of your life spent in prison for something you didn't do and how terrible that would be. So I really appreciate your willingness to talk about this, Sam, because, and I talk about it because I have a firsthand knowledge because I'm involved, but I'm not seeking any credit. This is not about me at all, man. This is about those lawyers, students who sit there and work their butts off in law school all hours for this, the couple of the staff lawyers who give up high-paying legal jobs, right, to come and do this. I mean, it's really truly amazing.
That's,
so
it is,
you want to feel good about something, that we're righting some wrongs, even on the day we always talk about doing that on the grassroots level and not always having to be about presidential politics, you know, or whatever. These are the ways you can do that. I mean, there's many other ways besides the Innocence Project, but people can get involved in all sorts of ways. And it's a good thing.
And so that's a good segue into, you know, yesterday was also an amazing day. You know, it's let Myla sit down and watch much of the president's speech last night. because, you know, the implications of what this move means for millions of people is pretty stunning. I mean, you know, I mentioned at the top of the show that yesterday, and I think I mentioned at the top of the show that yesterday we had on the program a woman who was one of the people whose application who, you know, applied and was granted essentially a stay of her deportation or a you know, a legal status or non-illegal status, I guess, under the DREAM Act, under DACA.
Right.
And her father had been deported 6 or 7 years ago after living in this country for 19 years. Her mom has been in this country for 26 years. She worries every time she doesn't hear from her, you know, for an hour on the phone that she's been, for some reason, deported. And her mom is going to get relief from this. I mean, it's just sort of stunning to contemplate. And it's been a fascinating debate. Yesterday I had on the program a friend of mine who is a self-professed independent, gets most of his news from Ann Coulter. But be that as it may, and
so he's not what you call moderate independent.
Indeed, but for him, supposedly there he agrees with the policy. He just thought the timing was wrong, and of course, you know,
he does realize that Ann Coulter, as far as we know, is currently the undead, right?
Well, see, now that's the type of uncivility that is really ruining Washington, Cliff. And that's why nothing—that's why nothing gets done, because people mock Ann Coulter. I mean, look, and so it was fascinating to watch last night the MSNBC coverage, the little CNN coverage that it got, the Fox coverage. They're going ballistic on Fox, but they don't know what to do. There is nothing for them to do about this. And we should remind people, nobody's gotten legal status. The only thing that has happened is we have 400,000 people who are deported annually. President Obama has sat upon the most rigid and, in my estimation, vindictive regime of deportation, just from a numbers standpoint, in history. 406,000, I think it was last year. There is only resources to do that. And there are 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country. This is basically just simply saying we are going to codify and rationalize the way that we deport people and who we go after to deport. And you people, you 5 million people, you are not on the list. You've got 3 years and to which time, hopefully, we will have figured out some way to deal with this in a rational way through legislation. But until now, you're just deferred. And under deferral practices, you can get work permit, et cetera, et cetera. That's it.
Right.
And
yet still an enormous, as you pointed out, it's such an enormous deal for people who are worried every time they get that phone call or every time, you know, a policeman's peering around the corner or I mean, the have to live that life, I would say, makes your life, I would guess, would make your life, let's call it not only hellish, but a lot less productive. And, you know, and just put you in the kinds of circumstances that are just, I consider to be inhumane. And I'm sorry, but there is a point where this argument becomes stale from the other side and becomes stupid. And frankly, considering how many Republicans in the Senate voted for a bill and how many in the past were for this, were for even more progressive bills than this. This is just another one of those cases of the goalposts moving, and you have to oppose it because the Democrat and the black guy are for it. You know, I mean, yes, there's a radical right wing in the Republican Party. We're all familiar with them. And they're crazy people, and they don't have answers to anything. But to me, the bigger problem are the ones that give in to all of them, that won't stand up for what's right because of them. And that's what's led nothing to happen. Because, again, it's that feedback loop. We always talk about the Rush Limbaughs and the Fox Newses and the people like that. They make money off of this. of sowing this kind of hatred. But for most rational people who look around and say, should we just ignore what's a major problem, whether it be people not having health care or undocumented workers here or whatever it might be, or should we take care and have come up with constructive, progressive, and fair answers to our problems? It doesn't mean that there's no punishment for misbehavior. It doesn't mean that there's no taxes to be paid. It doesn't mean there's no, you know, that there isn't something like that, but it means you've got to come up with something, a policy to solve these problems. And the far right is not interested in that. They're just interested in hating. You know, whatever it is, give them something to hate. There's nothing constructive coming from there. And that's what makes all this sort of that much more angering. But at least for right now, it should have been done a hell of a lot sooner. And, you know, I want to give President Obama credit, and I will, for what he just did. You know, but I can't, of course, not mention that this could have been done ages ago. And in my opinion, should have been done ages ago, because he gave the Senate a chance. They acted. When the House refused to act, it should have been fine. You got 2 weeks to act or however long. And if you don't, I'm going to do it.
Right. And this is also not to mention the DREAM Act, which was brought up. It was actually passed by the House in 2010 and then filibustered in the Senate. I mean, so it's fascinating, though, you know, to watch. Is it Mark McKinnon? Steve Schmidt on MSNBC.
The bald one.
Who was just sort of outraged and really basically the same argument. It's like this sort of like weird process argument, this notion that now we have really foreclosed the opportunity for something to pass in the House and the Senate with the new Congress coming in, which is just absurd. If the House is not going to pass a Senate bill that has passed in the Senate with Republican support, that calls for 700 miles of fence, that calls for 30,000 some odd more border guards, essentially, I guess, and that all of that must be done before any other action happens. If they're not going to pass that a year ago, they're not going to pass anything at any time ever. And I don't need to be a mind reader to look at that. You know, I cannot tell you with 100% assuredness that if I drop a hammer on my toe, it's not going to float up in the air. But every experience I've ever had with gravity would show me that would tell me that the hammer is going to drop and land on my foot if I let go of it.
No, I mean, that's the thing, and that's why when I bring up the ones that aren't the raving lunatics, you know, Steve Schmidt's an example of a guy who clearly wasn't much of a fan of Sarah Palin after she was on the ticket because of how radical she is. He has a gay brother, and of course, like every Republican who has a gay family member, they're suddenly for gay marriage because they become liberal on things that help their family. But at least fought for that and raised money for it and stuff like that. But these are the ones I blame the most, to be honest with you. Because your David Vitters and Jim Inhofe and whatever are just horrible people who don't know any better. They're backwoods idiots who never should be in a body like the U.S. Senate. And if it was a reasonable body where where every state didn't get two people, even if you've got three people and a cow in your state, you didn't get two senators, then we wouldn't be stuck with a Jim Inhofe. But that's the way things work. We get them. But to me, it's the ones who enable them. And Steve Schmidt is from that group. Because he's sitting here repeating these stupid talking points that are just a bunch of crap, you know? I mean, if I were sitting there on MSNBC, like I was about 8 years ago when I got banned for a couple of years, I'd probably get banned for a couple more years for what I would say to him. Because they'd just be like, I mean, are you an imbecile? Have you watched the same Congress that I've watched? Have you watched them refuse to act on this? Have you watched them take what was the Heritage Foundation health bill and turn it into communism and literally try to repeal it 50 times, and now they're going to try to repeal it again and block Medicaid and try to get rid of the medical device tax and just use everything in their power to go after what is in the end a very moderate bill? These people are not people who are trying to constructively do anything. So don't feed me that shit. You know, I mean, it gets tired. Oh, if we just waited a little bit longer. Okay, right. Steve. I'm sure they were saying that on Scarborough, good old Scarborough Country. I think that's still the name of it, isn't it? I'm sure they were saying that, too, which is Obama's being an autocrat. And, you know, I mean, right. It's, you just, you know, the sort of I'm a reasonable Republicans like Joe Scarborough and Steve Schmidt and Michael Steele, you know, and some of the other ones like that. And you just want to be like, you know. At what point do you walk away from your party because it's just effing nuts? You decide that, but don't BS me and don't come out and tell me that this is a functioning organization anymore and not a frickin' cult, because you look for yourself. The evidence is right there.
Yeah, of course. All right, let's turn and you know we'll be talking more about this immigration and its response in the, I imagine in the days and weeks to come. But let's just take a couple minutes because I know that we're actually up against it and you got to run.
Well, I can leave my mom stranded at the airport, which might be funny, but she's a Jewish mother, and you know.
All right. Well, then you know what? We'll get to this story, but basically,
no, we can talk about it. No, okay. Let's talk about it right
now.
We've
basically,
got a couple
what's happening is. We know we've been waiting for months and months and months on the Senate Intelligence Committee report on the CIA torture. We know that the CIA was spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee staffers and suffered no penalty, as far as I can see. We know that the Obama administration, not just the CIA, but the White House, has basically sided with the CIA in this fight. There is every reason to believe that the White House and the CIA is slow walking the release of this report, because they know once the Republicans take over in the Senate, they will kill it, and they will probably redact more than even the White House is willing to redact at this point. And so,
Sam explained to me, because you know I should follow this more closely. I do. I follow everything that goes on up there at least somewhat closely, but clearly some things I have to spend more time on than others. I mean, are they protecting their friends in the defense industry or in the national security apparatus? Or are they? I mean, I don't get it. And maybe
I'm obtuse. Protecting its own turf, and it's protecting.
But I mean, even Dianne Feinstein has said so. It's Obama protecting the CIA that was the CIA under Bush and Cheney. I mean, essentially, if the names come out in this thing about people who did this, are going to be people. Go ahead.
These are people who are well-placed in the CIA right now, who have received promotions under Obama. Look, the CIA is the CIA.
I know, but when Dianne Feinstein wants something to go public, Dianne Feinstein is no libertarian, as we know. When it gets to the point where she is livid about it and saying this needs to go public, to me, I mean, that's amazing. Right?
Oh,
I mean,
that's what this has been from day one. I mean, look, the CIA has categorically lied throughout this entire process. They've lied in open Senate hearings. They have lied behind closed doors. They have lied to the American public. There is just no two ways about it. They destroyed evidence. Gonzalez, what was the name of the guy who had destroyed the evidence? And he's since been promoted. He did it accidentally, destroyed the torture tapes. So this has been ongoing. And the real question is, and I presume that Mark Udall has just been using it as some type of leverage and doesn't.
But he can read it into testimony.
But he could read it into testimony like Mike Revelle did with the Pentagon Papers. I imagine I'm a little bit cynical and I think he's just doing it probably just to provide leverage and doesn't really intend to ever do it or doesn't have the cojones to do it, because he could have done it before, when it came to all the stuff that he and Wyden were warning us about the NSA. But, hope springs eternal. And this is something that needs to come out. It needs to come out. And if they
if you're a democracy, you can't go on when things like this don't come out. At some point, enough of these types of things, enough of a lack of transparency, enough times. Remember, someone like Elliot Abrams, because of what Bush Sr. did with pardoning all these guys from Iran-Contra to save his own butt and others, then was able to come back and serve in George W. Bush's administration. You know, that's the problem when you let guys get away with behavior like this. They're not going away. They keep being promoted. They keep being a cancer on our government, and it only gets worse. And of course, implies to others that maybe they should behave the same way.
All right. Well, listen, I certainly don't want to be responsible for your mom being stranded at the airport. So, Cliff, first off, we're not going to be on next week. So I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving, a little prematurely, but nevertheless.
Well, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And the last thing I'll say to you early is, as I just saw on Facebook, you may want to go check it out. At Walmart, they've got up at least one of them here, a happy, it says delicious for Hanukkah, boneless smoked ham. So, somebody got a picture of that. George Takei, I believe, is sending that around. So if you want to get your Hanukkah ham, everyone, Walmart's
the
place to do it. Yes, exactly.
Right. Thanks.
Thanks,
Sam.
Sam.
All right. We'll talk
Bye.
To you soon. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Isabel Gillies.
Put the music up first. Music up first. There you go.
Yeah.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report and on the phone. And I've got the theme song. On the phone, of course, we have the wonderful Isabel Gillies, who you may know from this theme song.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Yes, ladies
Hello.
And gentlemen. Now, Michael, you can keep my board up. So you keep the 360 up. And you only need to fade up music when it's playing. So just give
But this sounds better than the old office.
Well, we've done a little bit of processing on my voice. And also I've had a cold, so I sound a little bit deeper. And yes, yeah, so
it's more. It's so much clearer. It's unbelievable.
Well, we have also a lot more bandwidth here, so you know we're upgrading every day. We're working on upgrading. That's what
well,
we're
it's
doing
good.
Around here. Isabel.
Good times.
Now,
hashtag
you,
good times.
What? So, what are you doing these days? You're writing, aren't you? Intensely.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. So I wrote. I was writing this book, and I. This new book, and I was like, because I'd gone, not on tour, but I'd gone a couple of different places, heard a lot of different, to some festivals, heard a lot of different YA authors, and I was feeling like the market a little bit, and I was like, oh, I'm going to write a book that's just going to sell, right? I'm just going to have this idea, and I'm just going to, and it's just going to be about, you know, it's going to be sexy and faster and just not quite how I, you know, I write, I'm not sort of like a it's like about
sort of
superheroes.
Like dry and slow. That's basically.
Yeah. No. I just write about small things. You know, I write about, you know, making a bed or falling in love. And I was like writing superheroes and all this stuff. And it was really fun and it was called Link and it was really cool. But it just wasn't kind of, anyway. So I, this morning, had the epiphany.
Wow.
I was like, wait a minute. Whoa. It's not about that. It's about something else. And then it was like, and then all the, you know, just ideas and all the things that I knew I should.
Yeah, breaking news.
Yeah. So that happened this morning to me.
Wow. And so you've completely changed the direction of the book.
Si, senor.
Wow. And it's going to be, you're writing it all in Spanish.
Si. Yo escribe en español.
Wow, very good.
Now, anyway, so that was just this morning. I don't know, but and what else? My son is in a play. Is playing Hook in Peter Pan.
Oh my gosh! At our old school.
Uh huh.
Oh, Milo. Whatever.
No. Oh, okay. This is not a school. This is a little thing called Kids Company.
Oh wow!
The little theater company at the Y, and it's very cool. It's like on stage and everything. So that's happening this weekend. And
that's exciting.
Yeah. And Thanksgiving is here comes Thanksgiving, which, you know, I love Thanksgiving.
Now, do you go to Maine or you do this in New York?
No, this is in New York. But let me tell you something.
Okay.
I just thought of something. I love Thanksgiving. And I wrote an article about how I hated Halloween. And I wrote it on Yahoo. Just an article, and it was called How I Hate Halloween, but really, in the end, I kind of love Halloween, and it was a humor piece, but it was... Okay,
funny.
Let me just tell you what happened to me.
Yeah.
I wrote that piece. You can't imagine the comments.
You were protested.
Oh, my goodness. Someone called me a sour old mule. Someone said, this sour old mule, if she were in my family, I would take all the pumpkin guts and throw them at her face.
Wow. Well, that's actually not as bad as it can get. You know, Isabel, let me tell you something. One thing you should definitely not do is read the comments. You spend
because
too much time reading comments, and I'm telling
the
you.
The hater's going to hate.
Well,
as Taylor says.
Just about that. It's also that online, there's some pretty nasty elements, and particularly I think it's even worse if you're a woman. But that's basically what it is. You know, it's, my suggestion
mean?
To you. Oh, yeah.
I mean, not even mean. I would say, one more than that. Almost like, whoa, do you want me to have physical harm? I mean, it wasn't just like, I think I don't agree with her. It was like, this person deserves to be punched in the face, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you're attacking Halloween, after all.
Well, God knows. I thought everybody hated Halloween. Who doesn't hate Halloween? Most of the country, I find out.
Yeah, exactly. Is this the first time you've ever been on the internet as well?
I've never gotten such hate. And my little son, Thomas, I was like, look, this is an article, because it really had a lot of love in it, too. I was like, this article I wrote about Halloween, all about imagination and all this stuff. And then we got to the comments, and he was like, Mom, oh, my gosh. I was like, I'm so sorry you had to see that. But then I just said I was going to shake it off. Like,
now, what do you do with your kids in terms of the internet? Like, do they have a device where they can text with their friends yet?
Yes.
You let them post YouTubes? What's the deal?
No. I am the most restrict. They have all the equipment, but because here's the thing. You kind of want to get them just the most basic flip phone.
Uh-huh.
But here's the thing. The flip phone doesn't really work. If you are in the, I have an iPhone. So I'm in the world of iPhone, right?
Right.
And so my kids, if they have a flip phone, we're not really communicating. Like, I can't, it's two different.
At what age did you let them get the ability to text their friends? That's what I'm actually genuinely
interested. That's what you're dealing with. I got the ability, they got the phone, period, which, so that's ability to text. is when you'd give them a phone.
Right.
When they were on the street without me, when they were on the street without any parent taking them or any caregiver taking them somewhere. If they were going to walk by themselves down 83rd Street or 49th Street.
Wow, and how old is that?
For me, it's fifth grade.
Fifth grade. All right, fair enough. So
what's happening with Myla?
She wants something to text her friends, and I am reluctant. And
how old is she?
She's 9.
Oh, so it's not quite in fifth grade yet.
No.
The standard is fifth grade.
All right, fair enough. Now that I've resolved that, I can go back and I can tell her that you said that.
Yeah, say it's fifth grade, sweetie, that's it. Because here's why. She will not experience, there's something called FOMO. Do you know what that is?
I think I had it once, but antibiotics clears it up, I think, pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It's fear of missing out, okay? And this is why they want to text and why. Remember, they're a different beast than us.
Oh,
our
no,
children
I have that.
Are,
I have that. It's just that I'm so overwhelmed. I know I'm missing out so much that it's too overwhelming to even process. So the fear is just like paralyzes me. Because I'm missing out because of my kids. I'm missing out on
Right, well,
fun.
Which is why I'm on the air, because I'm going to tell you what to what. I get it, but here's the thing. Her fear of missing out will become something that's actually real in, like, sixth grade.
Mm.
So you don't have to worry. For a fourth grader, no phone for you, sweetie. Sorry. Texting, you can, if you want to talk to your friends, use the landline.
We don't have
you know, which they don't even understand what that means, and
right.
They don't even know how to use it. And,
right.
You know. But she's in fourth grade, so they can talk at recess. That's,
right.
You know. Then fifth grade, then you're like, okay, then they're texting. And then sixth grade, she's going to, like, be so texting, and there's going to be mean girls and everything. But you can't control that in sixth grade. That's just their life.
All right. Well, I'm glad we've got that resolved, Isabel. Now,
that's what I think, anyway.
Let me. This is something I wanted to actually bring up with you: is the passing of Mike Nichols. Do you have like what? You didn't like it?
Love Mike Nichols.
I mean, he. I have to say that I have some old footage of a compilation of him and Elaine May back in the day that I think was some of the greatest stuff. They had one speech that they gave at the Emmys where they basically came up as if they were winning or were presenting, and it was for mediocrity. And it was at that time they were already crapping on the people around them, and that's what I think I really appreciated.
I just saw something about that online. Did you post that? Someone posted that.
Oh, no, I didn't post it. I have it on VHS, I think.
Oh, someone put it up there. I loved I loved Heartburn so much. And The Graduate. I think what I admired about his work was the humanness of it, the sort of dailiness of it. I liked a lot of the, you know, it sort of was like life, but in the movies.
Hmm.
That's what I liked. It's just relatable.
But he died. Okay, so that's
it. He died. He died because he's old.
Yeah, he was getting old. All right.
He's well.
So what else is going on, Isabel? You've been writing. You had the revelation today. You're going to change.
Had the revelation.
It all in Spanish, and it's going to be like a superhero thing.
I've been watching some TV. I've been watching some. I like Nashville a lot. I'll just tell you that. I know what I've been doing. I've taken up the guitar and singing lessons.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Hold the presses. But here's the bigger point of it. So I'm almost 45, and I was singing in...
I don't believe that for a moment.
C'est vrai, mon cher.
Okay.
And it's true. I was singing in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I have a decent voice. Like, no one would kick me out of a church choir, but no one's going to pay me to sing.
Right.
And I thought, you know what? This is my one time going around.
Well, now, hold on for one second. You know, you're at church. I don't think anybody's going to kick you out of a church choir, even if your voice is not very good, is it? I mean, that cutthroat, it's church, for God's sakes. I mean, no pun intended.
I just mean that if I was in a choir at church, I could get by. I wouldn't mess everybody up.
Right, okay.
You know?
Okay.
I think they might be like, you can be stand here, but just please don't sing because you're kind of messing up.
Just mouth the words watermelon. And
right.
It'll be okay.
So I think that I can hold my own. Well, it's a fine voice, but it's not, you know, I'm certainly not Carrie Underwood, right? But I want to be, And I've always wanted to be a rock star. But, so I thought, I'm 45, only go around once, and I'm going to have singing lessons and from my kid's guitar teacher and learn to play the guitar. And it's maybe the best hour of my week.
Wow. And so have you gotten good? How many weeks have you been doing this?
About since September.
Wow.
Yeah. I can play. I could almost try and play for you right now. Do you want me to try?
Maybe you could write a Jimmy Reaver cake theme song.
Well,
like,
I don't know.
Type of thing.
I don't know if I'm at songwriting yet. I'm now just learning how to play and do the notes.
Okay.
And then I pick any song I want, and here, I'll play you a song. God, why do I do this on public radio? Here, let's see if I can do it. What should I sing for you?
Whatever you
boring?
Got. Do you have that many songs?
No, not really, but...
All right, let's hear it.
All right, I'll try and do... Okay. If I... should stay. Well, I would only be in.
You know, Isabel.
Your way.
Maybe we should wait until you have better equipment on your end.
Did you hear that I was playing Dolly?
You know, tempo is also something. You haven't gotten quite to the tempo part.
Well, let me tell you something. It is rough to change chords.
Oh. God.
God almighty. It is no joke getting from a G to a C to a D.
If I had a nickel for every time I said that, usually I have trouble
well, Jimmy, we
getting
forget-
from the Q to like the 2-3 or something. That's tricky too. Isabel.
Well, I'm just trying something new. That's all I'm saying.
I love it. I think that's good.
Sorry people had to hear that.
I think it's inspirational for people.
Yeah. Why not try something new?
I love it. All right, so with that in mind, Isabel, what do you have as a recommendation? Because now, you know, I have some extra time over the next week, theoretically, because...
Right, Thanksgiving week, which was in my mind when I was choosing this. A couple of factors went into it.
I watched Maleficent the other day, and...
That's pretty fun.
That was a pretty good movie. It was the most violent movie that Mile has ever seen. And it's not even that violent.
Well, it was pretty...
There's a lot of battle scenes in there.
It was. I loved it, and I loved. But what I loved most was the thing of there's no good, no bad. You know.
Right. Well, that was Wicked too, right? Wasn't that? That's,
right.
That's what's happening now is that they're all sort of revising this notion of there's all these revisionist, I guess, fairy tales that are going around now, and they're also very. I noticed. Women empowering,
yeah.
which is also good because when I just remember when, you know, Mila was a small girl, just realizing like, holy crap, this is horrible. Every single book that in story that has been made, that for girls is basically like, hang in there, primp, and wait for the prince to show up. That's
and hopefully there's some biatch won't come and kill you and put you to sleep.
Right.
And right.
Watch out. Some old lady will try and stop you from having
who
happiness.
Once was beautiful
right.
And it takes all these things to make her not age and yada yada.
It's unbelievable how completely woven into the fabric. No matter how hard you try, and I did try hard, and for to a large extent, basically, at least in early age, completely, you know, it was like Mila was raised by wolves. She didn't know about any of that stuff. And then at one point, all of a sudden, she gets more excited in it. But
right, because you try and protect her from the reality. But the reality is that then you grow up and there are people you want the phone and then it all those fairy tales play out in your real life and then there's Botox. It's like a nightmare.
Oh God, that's
All right, that's not where I'm going with my movie.
It's going to be much easier with my son, because then I can actually just, like, all of those low-hanging fruit stuff. But you don't want to – I don't want to feed him that crap, too.
Is he playing with trucks and stuff?
You know what?
My kids never did.
I'll tell you something. We have basically the same toys that we got from Mila, right? We just basically kept them. And it's interesting. And they are, I don't know if it's right to say they're gender neutral, because people impose their own. But, like, I got Mila a hammer and, you know, like a tool set, as well as, like,
the doll and the whatever.
Yeah, you know, whatever it was. And so all this stuff is around. And I got to say that, like, Saul, I don't know if it's just like he identifies with me more, because I mean, but when I'm hammering something, Saul goes over and he will go get his hammer and he will start hammering. And not in a million years did Mila ever do that.
We're different. Boys and girls and men and women are different, and we like very specific things. And I think it's hardwired, and there's nothing you can do about it. Right. That's what I think. My kids never played with trucks, but then, and I was kind of waiting for it. But they never did. Well, maybe Thomas did. But they just fall into the pattern of whatever comes before them. I don't think there's any way you can avoid it. And there's a million articles written about it.
All right. Well, fair enough. But and I got news for you. Saul's also a little bit less he listens to me more.
Well, boys are better.
I'm going to leave it right there. That's it. He just looks at me like, what do you want me to do next?
Yeah.
Saul, will you pick up that and put it in the garbage? Okay.
Sure. Sure. I know. And girls are like, well, I don't know. Why do you want me to do that?
I made the trash can work. All right. So what do you got?
Okay. So here it is. It's a good one. Now, listen, truth be told, I didn't find it on Netflix, okay? But I found it on Amazon.
Well, that's fine.
It's only 10
Amazon's
bucks.
Fine. Oh, wait a second. I got to pay $10 for this?
Yeah.
That's like going to
the
movies.
You got to pay 10 bucks.
All right. What do you got?
But this is what I thought. It's holiday time and you can spring for it.
Okay.
That's what I thought. That was my thinking behind the money behind it. But here's where it is. You might be able to find it somewhere else, but I really wanted to see this movie since
here's
last
stunning,
year.
Stunning, though. Let me just say this. $10 for a movie. I don't know how long it is. Let's just say, assume it's going to be 120 minutes, right?
Uh-huh.
For $10... you get nearly 120 minutes a day of programming from this show, ladies and gentlemen. Become a member today at Join the Majority Report. Go, Isabel, go.
Okay, are you ready for
yes.
it? Okay. I wanted to see this movie all the way since last year.
Okay.
And I blew it because I saw that movie about the space, about what's her name in space.
Uh-huh.
And it was either that, Gravity, or right. this movie, and we chose Gravity because we're like, oh no, see it on the big screen, and that was a mistake in my opinion because I did not enjoy that movie so much.
Really? Okay.
And what we didn't see, which I saw, and I'm going to recommend to you and to people of America, is the movie Rush.
Rush.
The Ron Howard rival race car movie,
what?
Rush.
Really?
Oh.
Good?
Oh my goodness. Well, here's what. It's fun. It's you started out, yeah. So it's classic rivals.
Mm.
It's a real true story.
Who are the lead actors?
I forgot his name. He just was on the cover of People as America's Sexiest Man or People's Sexiest Man.
When I don't get the call from People, I don't even look at the magazine.
No, it's the guy it's Thor. It's Thor.
You have a team
the guy
of researchers
plays Thor.
There?
What?
You have a team of researchers there?
No, it's my friend Dana just came over and she's piping up. She's like, it's Chatham. It's not
okay,
Tatum
whatever. Thor, I don't know who that guy is anyway, so go ahead.
Anyway, it's two guys. It doesn't matter because it's almost better that you don't, that there aren't big actors
you know
in it.
Let's be honest. There could be big actors in it and I wouldn't know unless it was like, I don't know, Clint Eastwood and Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, no, it doesn't matter. It's about two race car drivers, famous and real, and their rivalry and Formula One, and it's set in the 70s, and it's Ron Howard directing, so it's good, you know. It's what it is. This is what it is. It's good times.
Good times.
It's hashtag good times.
Wow, it seems to be your theme these days.
Yeah, because here's why. Why have a bummer night? Why not have a delicious glass of wine, sit down, and watch something that's actually going to be sort of fun? And if you think the dialogue is a little cheesy sometimes, who cares?
Yeah.
Because you're in the race car, and you're zooming around the race car track, and there's sex, and it's so fun, and it's so satisfying, and I recommend it to everybody because I just know that you end that movie, and you're like, well, that was satisfying.
That does not sound like a fun to me.
Why?
I don't know. It doesn't. I don't know what it is. Doesn't.
Are you kidding me?
It just sounds like there's just too much pressure. I don't want to
for
have
who?
To, just all this whole fun that is supposed to happen when you watch this movie. I don't want to.
No. It's not like you're having fun. I'm just saying you're going to get into it. It's like how you watch a movie. It's like a movie of the way movies are supposed to be, like popcorn, and you get your soda and you go, and it scratches all the itches. It's just, you're not going to go and go, oh God, that was dumb to spend that time
all
doing
right.
that.
Rush.
It's a big holiday movie. You know what I mean? It's like and also Formula One, doesn't that tickle your fancy a little bit?
No.
Fast Cars, Fast Women?
No.
Oh, you're being a little bit of a Debbie Downer.
I'm a little bit. I think I still may have a cold. But I'm going to rent it. We're going to rent it.
I think you should rent. I think Nikki will like it. It's not, of course, Myla is in bed. But also it could be, you know, Myla goes to a play date on Saturday afternoon. It's all autumnal outside and maybe having leftover Thanksgiving sandwiches. And you're like, you know what? Let's just tuck into Rush.
All right. And what do I do with Saul? Hopefully he's taking
a nap. Who cares? He's taking a nap. He's just a kid. He's a baby.
He could watch the movie.
He could watch the movie. He'll be like, vroom, vroom. That's fine. It's Myla. Myla goes to a friend's house. You and Nikki toast up some delicious bread, put some turkey on there, get under the blanket and watch Rush. It's so I'm giving you like such a layup.
Man, that's not the way it works at my house. We gotta get
no.
a toaster.
You're like, okay, bye, Myla. Have fun. See you later. Okay, great. Let's get the toaster, get the sandwiches going, put a little dressing on it. That'll taste good. Then get the blanket. How about some cold cider? Put on Rush.
Who's going to do all this shopping?
What? I shop all my whole life. I'm all in right. the damn supermarket.
Well, then bring it. Bring it over to our place. All right, so the
bring
movie
it to
is
Brooklyn?
Rush.
I think not.
All right, I know. All right, Isabel.
All right, I had a lot of political questions for you, but, I mean, what about, I hate the whole Bill Cosby thing. Okay, we'll talk about it another time.
Oh, you know what? We will we'll talk about it. I have a feeling the Bill Cosby thing's still going to be gone. So you have a great Thanksgiving, Isabel.
Happy Thanksgiving, and to everybody. It's the best holiday.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm thankful for you.
It's the second. Oh, well, that's very sweet. I'm thankful for you, Isabel.
Thanks.
Despite what you've been trying to do to Halloween. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye, guys.
All right. Now, we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song that's a Thanksgiving Day song, but you know what? I think we should save it. We should save it for our Thanksgiving show with Janine. And I think Jimmy would appreciate that.
I agree.
Now, Jimmy might say, hey, play the song twice, but we're a little bit up against it today. So folks, this is a reminder. Pod survey, we're doing it. We're trying to get some advertising, and you know that it's difficult for this program because it is a political show, frankly. It's not a question of our numbers, or they wouldn't have signed us up in the first place. Our numbers are there for a typical podcast. In fact, I think our numbers, our monthly numbers, are probably a little bit higher than your average doing well podcast. I know it's not Mark Maron's show, but whatever. Point is that to get advertisers, though, we need to establish that we have living, breathing individuals who have tastes, who listen to the show. And the way that we do that is by doing a survey. You can go to podsurvey.com/majority. And it will take you like, I don't know. I filled it out like about 15 times to make it look like we. No, I filled it out and it took about, I don't know, literally, I don't know, 4 minutes. And you go there, it's completely anonymous. If you want to get into the raffle, they offer a raffle for a $100 Amazon gift card. If you want to do that, you can put your email address in, but you don't have to. They will not sell your email address. They will not send you any email, but for to let you know that you have won the raffle, if you win the raffle. So head over there. It's podsurvey.com/majority. We've put a link up at majority.fm if you forget what the URL is. It will do us a big solid. It'll take you 4 minutes. I don't know, maybe a dozen questions. Are you married? Do you have kids? The only, it's, like I say, completely anonymous, but for the NSA, and maybe if you hear any helicopters flying overhead, you'll know that the FBI is on to you as well. So check that out, podsurvey.com/majority. All right, let's go, excuse me. Now I'm really convinced that I have pneumonia. I've had it once before. It was an unpleasant. I cracked the
I really hope you don't have pneumonia.
I cracked a rib.
I got walking pneumonia in college.
What's that?
I got walking pneumonia in college.
Did you?
And I remember I finally went to the doctor because I kind of just blew it off. And he was like, you're in really good health because it's amazing that you're able to walk around, but you need to immediately take a lot of drugs and lay down because it's pretty bad. And when I went to the campus health services, they were like, have a ginger ale. Don't worry about it.
Wow. Yeah. Ginger ale for walking pneumonia.
They really, I mean, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Campus health services were not the best.
Oop,
are we going turn into the
my,
fun now?
Yes, you got to turn my phone down.
Call is now.
Oh, yeah. All right, well, let's take a break, and we'll go into the fun half. The number 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM or via the app, which you can get for free at majorityapp.com. Folks, we'll be here Monday. On Tuesday, Janine Garofalo will be here doing her famous, we're going to give you some advice on how to deal with your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving. So if you want to ask her a question, tune in live. If you can't tune in live, email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Put in the subject line the word Thanksgiving, because nobody knows how to spell Janine. That's my experience. Most people know how to spell Thanksgiving. If you don't know how to spell Thanksgiving, we don't want to hear from you. Unless English is not your first language. If you're used to, you know, if you speak like Sanskrit or something like that, or
let's go to the fun house.
Yeah. We'll be right back after this.
Hey.